You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner, Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
And welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Well, it is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, June 22nd, 2023, the days begin to be shorter here.
Yes.
Summertime.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No.
No, don't look at the light.
Slow down.
Exactly. Slow down. Here we go. Here we go. Well, you know, it so slowly wends its way through the summer. I think we have summertime left. Today is the first day of summer, is it not?
The first 24 hours.
First full day, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. And that is Heidi Cartwright saying hello. Good morning, Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning. And I learned that information this morning on the Ron Jolly Show, that it's the first full 24-hour day of summer.
You're smart. You're listening to Ron Jolly in the mornings.
See, the Detroit News used to have a slogan that said, if you read the news, you know.
There you go.
So,
good.
So if you listen, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Heidi Cartwright, our own retirement income certified professional and managing executive, along with Deanne Jennings. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning, Dennis. And it's my pleasure to say happy summer to everyone.
Hey.
Happy summer. So, you know, the water's warming up slowly. And
it's
you see
still
more
chilly.
People in, but, yeah.
In my view.
The grandkids, we took them Sunday afternoon. No, Monday afternoon. Both days, to be exact, to Elk Rapids. And both days, they were jumping in the water.
East Bay?
Mm-hmm. And that would be East Bay, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've East seen Bay. People in West Bay and Traverse City splashing around, swimming.
Sure. So. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. That's a gorgeous park, by the way, in Elk Rapids. It's all right.
Oh, it's great.
Oh,
yeah.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Lovely. So we just got through the Social Security class yesterday, had a nice turnout, and loved teaching. Mm. That facility works for us. It's our own classroom. Thank you very much. But two screens up there, bam, it's just fun to be able to use that, to make use of it. It was a long time dream. Man, we got a class coming up on RMDs. You should talk about that a bit.
Yeah. It's the ABCs of RMDs and QCDs.
So how those work, how they might benefit you, how you could possibly even avoid some taxes along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Tax avoidance, that's the legal term, okay? Just for full disclosure, the legal side of tax avoidance is avoidance, not evasion. We don't use that word in our careers here, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not a good word, a bad word, okay? And then avoiding 60-day rollover mistakes, that'll be August 16th. So RMDs and QCDs July 19th, and avoiding 60-day rollover mistakes August 16th.
And then in September, we have a guest coming in to teach us about Medicare. Mm-hmm. So anybody who has questions about Medicare might want to call the office and sign up for that luncheon learn.
And I think I'm going to go to that class, even though Medicare is way, way out there. Exactly how far out there, Dennis? About a year and a half. I mean, that's a long time.
It's all
way
relative.
Out there.
Never too early to prepare.
That's
that is
right.
Correct.
That's right. So I'm sure they would agree with that. And we're guessing that we're going to be standing room only for that one. Mm-hmm. Standing room only.
Okay. SRO.
Yeah.
All righty.
You know, it's great. So today we're talking about the economy. Heidi will be talking about treasury bills and bonds, how those work and why those could be important to you, especially as an indicator of interest rates, right, Heidi?
Yes.
There it is. And then some great stats Deanne's got today, showing us the way in terms of what's happening. So today's quote to begin the show, talk is cheap, but it takes money to buy whiskey. Did you know that, Ron?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Wild
stuff.
It takes
money to buy whiskey. Well, that was in the days when they used silver and gold, real money. You know, today it's...
Paper.
Mm-hmm. That was from the mid-1800s. The Fed, tough, hawkish talk with no action. That's kind of where we're at. That's interesting in terms of the economy. Since March of 22... Almost more than a year ago. Yeah, thank you. It's more than a year ago. 10 consecutive increases of accumulated 5 percentage points have occurred vis-a-vis the Fed. We're now at 5.25%, the most rapid series of increases since
This is for you, Ron.
The most previous century, the 19...
I don't know.
80s.
I was going to say the 80s. Yeah. No, that's when the interest rates were very high.
They were indeed.
Yes. Indeed.
When Mr. Volcker was chairman of the Fed.
It was like 16, 17%. Doesn't
that sound crazy? He was like 7 feet tall. I always expected him. You know, did you play basketball? You know, that sort of thing.
Can you imagine that today, though, if you were talking about 17% interest rates?
Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy when you think back on it.
Like extortion. Yeah.
History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. Extortion, exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I think the mob is happy with anything in the 20% range, apparently. And so, what do we have? At 5.25% is the current discount rate. They're anticipating the market and or the Fed is saying we'll probably have two more rate increases to take us through the end of this year, and then take us to a 22-year high. And then I was noting here, remember Silicon Valley Bank, 3 bank failures. What's happened as a result of these rising rates? Well, it's causing some problems in the economy. What's the real answer here to these interest rate and inflation driver situations? It's the government spending less money. So let's just say that right up front. If the government were to demand less money, we would have fewer price increases driven by inflation. Okay? What are they trying to solve? Their own spending issues. So with the one hand, they're taking money from us in essence in terms of taxes and funding themselves to spend more money. On the other side, they're raising rates so that we don't spend as much money in the economy. So it's a push-me-pull-you sort of situation.
So even with the last, 3 years, the flooding of the United States with government-printed money for ARPA and these COVID rescue plans,
sure,
by this administration and the Trump administration, even besides that, every year the government has to borrow money, right? They spend more than they take in. So when they borrow that money, that's new money they're putting in the economy, and that causes inflation, doesn't it?
It does, because it does create more demand. But they're also spending on a lot of programs. Now, some would call them wasteful. Economists would call them perhaps wasteful, because they don't really weigh in on that. Is it wasteful or not? Well, we don't care about that. We just know that they're creating that demand. They're buying goods and services with their spending sometimes. Given that reality, it is creating that much more demand, so it's creating an inflation problem in the economy. So they're really kind of ignoring the elephant in the room in that particular situation, just in case you really wanted to know. You heard it here first. So the stock market to the Fed, according to Greg Ipp of the Wall Street Journal, He says, if the Fed has succeeded in pushing the economy into recession, rather, you wouldn't be seeing these things. Stocks entering a new bull market, which we're at,
mm-hmm.
which Deanne's going to have that stat for us. I don't want to take away her thunder, eh? A rebounding housing market. Yes, it is.
It is.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. It is rebounding. Prices are firming. Builders are actually doing okay these days. You wouldn't have known it, I'm telling you, because the news tends to be quite negative. Now, am I all rose-colored glasses today? No, obviously not. But that's what's happening out there. Okay? Or long-term treasury yields well below the inflation rate. Long-term treasury yields well below the long-term treasuries, 20-year treasuries right now, at about 4%, Heidi. And she's going to discuss that. Can you believe how low that interest rate is? I mean, relative to everything else, who would buy a 20-year treasury bond yielding 4% today? Not me. Seriously. So why? Well, because they think, in essence, the market believes they've priced this to say, we don't think rates are going to go continually higher. We think 4% is okay. So they have bid those prices up in a disbelief of the Fed's noise. They disbelieve it. Further detail. Since October, all have changed direction. The S&P 500 is up more than 20% since last fall's low. This really reflects excitement about artificial intelligence, AI. Mm-hmm. AI. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this in some of the recent shows. It is moving so fast. It's going exponential. Exponential in terms of computer power, chip power. NVIDIA is the most recent example of a company that's on the forefront of that. And a higher P.E. ratio, that's the price-earnings ratio. Stocks are being bid up because they're confident, relatively confident, that prices will be driven higher. Now, next week, the market will be lower, so you know I'll have to eat my hat when it comes to that state.
That'll be a different article.
Yeah. Right. Meaning investors are willing to pay more for a dollar of future profits. Okay. That, in turn, is due to a decline in the 10-year Treasury yield, which is now well below both short-term interest rates and the inflation rate, a relatively unusual configuration.
Unusual.
Behind the rally in stocks is a belief that inflation would soon plummet and that the economy will slow in response to past rate increases. Well, we just saw the unemployment numbers out today, and they're still relatively high, indicating that apparently the Fed's slowing down of the economy is working. So the market views that as relatively positive. 264,000, I think, was the read today. We'll see whether or not they do any corrections to it.
Yeah. I think they do it every time.
Oh, yeah. No, we didn't mean that. It was really 255, you know, whatever that is. So why are we continuing to talk about this? I have no idea. Why are we? Well, because we do want to know, if possible, which direction interest rates are headed and generally where the stock market is headed, because we want to know who's going to be elected in 2024, don't we? Mm-hmm. No, that's not why. Although it certainly is going to make it interesting. What we do want to know is what direction the stock market and how are things going in our economy that we know and love. After all, it's part and parcel of our United States of America. Thank you very much. And this economy can drive us all forward. It's interesting to see how much the government has spent in essence, trying to get in the way of this economy, and it's amazing how the economy has just kind of muddled its way through all that morass of noise, if you will. What did he say, darling? I don't know. Okay. The muddling, the noise, the smoke and mirrors, if you will, of this current government spending blitz, and it's finally being slowed down.
If prices have gone up as they have due to inflation, or, well, mostly due to inflation, they're probably not going to come down, are they? So don't you have to have, like, income catch up, wages catch up to prices to relieve some of the hardship that people are going through?
Well, and or given that the demand is going to come down most likely for a lot of those products and services, they're just going to choose to not buy. We're not going to buy Johnny that bicycle this week.
Mm.
Not fun at all. Mm. It was a red bicycle he was really looking forward to in that case.
I did read something recently, and it backed up some anecdotal stories I heard. Some young families locally changed grocery stores because they found one that offered cheaper prices. And people are reacting, you know,
yes.
like you
mm-hmm.
said. So they're not buying certain things or they're seeking out lower prices.
That's economics. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will make those adjustments. Clients talk about that all the time. You know, I'm not buying that lettuce, you know, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying $7 for a head of that stuff, you know.
Well, on Fox Business News this week, I listened to that in the morning, and they had a story about higher income levels are now shopping at the dollar stores mm-hmm. and that they're not moving, even though inflation has slowed a little bit, they're not moving back. They're still going to these lower discount stores to get some of their staples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Darling, should we go to Walmart today?
Yeah, sure. Central banks to step back as inflation steps down, according to Simon White of Bloomberg. He disagrees with Greg Ipp, whom I've just read some of. And our own economist says, I am more in his camp, which I tend to agree with this. Rising global rate expectations are likely to be disappointed. It means that they're it's probably not going to happen. As you can guess, there's some disagreement about this. As slowing inflation significantly tightens real rates through the rest of the year, allowing central banks to deliver fewer hikes than priced, it simply means that, guess what? Most likely, we may see one or two possibly rate hikes, but even that's in doubt.
But they didn't. They that's what Powell said. They will do two, didn't he? Or
right.
he said likely. They'll
basically,
do two.
What he's referencing mm-hmm. and. Inflation is most likely going to step down because people are going to spend less. That's what those the decisions that they're making. And the economy appears to be slowing enough to where these people who are market prognosticators or really looking at the markets, as well as the markets themselves, have priced in most likely rates aren't going to rise much more here this year. We'll see, of course. Central banks' hawkish handiwork will be amplified in the coming months by slowing inflation, allowing them to limit further rate rises and leading to the likelihood that rate expectations around the world are overdone. Overdone. So if you think rates are going to fall, you're in pretty good company.
Hmm.
And that would mean what? Mortgage rates? Possibly starting to decline some more here. I wouldn't say by a windfall, if you will, but probably getting weaker and potentially driving stock prices or allowing them to remain relatively strong unless something else happens. You know, other things can weigh in on that. But given the current rate interest rate environment, currently it appears to be a lot of talk and talk is cheap, tough, hawkish talk with no action.
There you go.
No action. All right, Heidi, T-bills versus Treasury bonds. Know the difference.
Yes, and this is an article that comes to us from Kiplinger. And there's a lot of talk about Treasury bills out there, so I thought it'd be good to dive in a little bit and find out a little bit more about them. So the federal government raises huge amount of money by issuing debt, and some of those securities are called Treasury bills and Treasury bonds. These are the two main varieties, and they have the backing and full faith and credit of the U.S. government. And when I'm in meetings and I'm talking to clients, I do get some skepticism, some raised eyebrows mm-hmm. When I talk about the credit of the U.S.
Well, yeah, and no wonder. But what's interesting is this quote is patently, I think, incorrect. This means investors have a fairly low risk of non-payment of interest and loss of principal. A fairly low risk? I would say quite a low risk. Think about this in terms of you personally being able to print money.
Mm.
Could you pay your debts? Mm, yeah, as long as that faith in the money was relatively secure. It's relatively secure. Given that they can print money, I would say it's pretty good. Mm. Warren Buffett would agree with me, by the way, because he owns a lot of Treasury bills.
Couldn't we all get out of debt then if they would just allow us all to print our own money?
Well, yeah, except that, of course, it's illegal.
You wouldn't be able to afford to buy anything with prices are cheap through the roof. But
plus,
yeah.
I'm sure our paper wouldn't look the same. It just wouldn't look the same.
Yeah.
Well, Treasury bills and bonds each have a starting price of $100. You can buy either from a broker-dealer, from your financial advisor, or you can buy them from the federal government using the Treasury Direct website. So all treasuries are SALT free. And what does that mean? That means that the interest earned is the interest earned is state and local tax free. What that means, it's exempt from state and local taxes. The securities are only subject to federal taxes. So the major difference between a treasury bill and a treasury bond is what we call the maturity, or how long you hold the security. Mainly they vary when principal is repaid, which is called the maturity of the security, and how the interest is paid. So let's take a deeper dive into each one of these. Let's look at the treasury bill first. The treasury bill has 6 different maturities: 4-week, 8-week, 13-week, 17-week, 26-week, and 52-week. Or if you want to translate that to more understandable, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6-month, and then a year. So those are the different time periods or maturities that they have available. Treasury bills can be used as a cash alternative within the portfolio. So they provide a relatively stable return while preserving capital during a volatile market. So we see a lot of interest in these products because if you think of the year that we just went through in 2022, the market was down significantly. And people are looking for places, where can I put my money with relatively little risk, where I can get a nice or a healthy return back. And so they're looking at treasury bills because the interest rates for all these maturities are around the 5%, the annual percentage rate right now.
Yeah, which is compared to a year ago, you had actually printed that off, Heidi. They were closer to, what, 0.5% or something? Mm. It's amazing how much difference a year can make in terms of interest rates.
Yeah, last year around this time, the interest rates, the 1 month was around 1.1%, and going up to a year to 2.6.
Okay, so they had already started to rise, but 1 to 2.5 or so. Okay.
All right, so let's move on and look at Treasury bonds. All right, so Treasury bonds have 2 maturities. There are for 20 years and 30 years. And so if this seems like too long to hold a security for you, you can still invest in treasury bills and bonds because you can bypass the more lengthy maturities by selling them before they reach mature. So there is a secondary market for treasury bonds and treasury bills where you can buy and sell these products. So when you sell a treasury bond, it results in a capital gain or a capital loss, thanks to an inverse relationship between the price of a bond and interest rate levels. So when interest, all that means is when interest rates rise, treasury bond prices generally fall, and vice versa.
Hmm. And they can be volatile, especially the longer you are out. So if interest rates rise, let's say, by 2%, you could lose a relatively significant amount of your principal in that longer-term bond. That's the risk, the loss of principal. 10 to 20% would not be out of the realm of possibilities for each 1% rise in interest rates, okay? Yeah. So, again, in each 1% rise in interest rate, approximately, given other factors, of course, but about a 10% or so loss to principal.
So let's talk about how you get paid interest, because that's what everyone likes to know. So for a treasury bill, treasury bill has what we call imputed interest. This means that the interest is calculated as the difference between the price you pay for the security and the amount you get when it matures. So What we're saying is the federal government is not going to send you any interest payments if you have this short-term treasury bill. What's going to happen is you're going to buy, if you're buying $20,000 worth of treasury bills, you're going to buy it at a lesser price than $20,000. And then when it matures, you'll get paid your $20,000.
So your interest is imputed or included in the price change. So you might pay, I don't know, $19,000 for a $20,000 maturity balance. You pay 19 and you get 20 in 6 months or whatever. Okay.
And for a treasury bond, it is different. Because of the longer term maturity, the government will pay you a fixed amount of interest every 6 months until maturity. So you will get actual interest payments coming to you from the government for those 20 and 30 year securities. So these are interesting products, and the treasury bills especially are becoming more interesting because of the rapid rise that we have talked about by the Fed of the interest rates. This makes this much more attractive to put money in a short term when you can sort of gauge when you might need those funds, because you can invest for just a couple of months. But the interest rate is a respectable interest rate, and you can actually get a return for investing that money with relatively low risk.
And you can get out easily, too. So if you do need some of the funds, that's a key question. These are very liquid, and they trade actively on a daily basis. So it makes it very simple to get into and out of these securities, especially the shorter-term T-bills, yes.
For the T-bills, if it's a 5% interest rate, for example, that's, what do you say, annuitized? So that means if you put it in for 6 months, it would only be 2.5% interest?
Right, because when we talk about interest rates, we're always talking about that annual percentage yield. It's just so you can compare, because if they just gave you the rate you'd get, it would be hard to see what does this look like, a six-month look to a 1 month. So we always state in the annual percentage rate so that you can compare the different products.
Why would somebody do a 1 month T-bill or 3 month for that? I mean,
well, maybe you are buying a house and you're out looking, and you have a closing date coming up 2 months in the future, and you're like, wow, I'll just earn some interest on this money sitting in the bank.
You want a big chunk of money in there for that.
Well, right. I mean, if you're talking $100,000 at 5%, that's on a 1 year time frame, that's $5,000.
Right, but I mean, for like 1 month or even 3 months, for 3 months it would be divided by four, it'd be like 1.25% for 3 months. I guess better, right? If it's 5% for 12, for 3 months it would be.
Oh, a quarter of five would be a little over 1.5. No. That'd be about 1.3, somewhere in there, I think. 1.25. Sorry.
1.25.
Yes, he eventually arrives at the right result. So, see, I knew I was going to be out on the ledge on that. So 1.25% on a 3 month time frame is about $1,250 on a $100,000 investment.
Okay.
Yeah. It's larger than zero.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Right. So it's a relatively easy way to really get some earnings on your account or your interest without subjecting it to a loss of principal, and also providing significant liquidity in the process. Of course, always check if there are any fees or cost relative to that transaction.
As you bring that up, we had a question from the text line. How does an advisor make money selling treasury bills?
Well, usually the funds are under, if it's a fee-based arrangement, there's an annual fee that comes out usually quarterly. So if it's an annual fee of, let's say it's 1.25%, using the same result, it's 1.25 divided by 4. So you're going to be charged somewhat in terms of an advisory fee, usually for having that money under management. But each of those relationships are different depending on how that advisor works. So that's a great question to ask your advisor. Are there fees for doing this? And if so, what are they?
And you can buy direct from the government, you said?
Yes.
The website?
You can go to the Treasury Direct website and you can do it that way.
Yep. You bet.
Well, T-bills and T-bonds.
Indeed. Yes. You bet.
We have a text question.
Sure, do it.
Are there any managed funds which specialize in the buying and selling of treasury bills? so that I could just invest in a fund and not have to do it directly, even though I understand there would be a cost to doing it that way.
Oh, yes. There are several shorter-term mutual funds. Vanguard's one of them. They actually have a short-term Treasury Inflation Protection Securities Fund that we take advantage of significantly because it's relatively well-priced today given the reality of some inflation going on in our economy, which we're relatively constantly talking about with clients. So, you can invest in shorter-term bills and that sort of thing through many short-term funds managed through mutual funds. The price change there may be greater than what you'd normally experience, though, having bought the T-bills on your own for a specific maturity date, because you don't always know what that... And you can see what the average maturity is, but the price change may be more dramatic than what you would see in a regular Treasury bill.
Okay. What was the example you gave, the Vanguard? Which one?
The Short-Term Treasury Inflation Protection Securities Fund. The symbol, just for those who want to know, is VTIP, as in Paul. VTIP.
VTIP.
VTIP. You okay. Bet. Vanguard Short-Term Inflation Fund. All right, Deanne, stats of the day.
Absolutely.
Some interesting ones.
The S&P 500 confirmed a new bull market on June 8, 2023, using the standard definition of a 20 percentage plus rally that was preceded by a decline of 20 percentage plus on a closing basis. The prior bear market experienced a peak to trough decline of 25.4% and lasted 282 days from January 3rd, 2022 to October 12th, 2022. And that source is Bespoke.
Now, unfortunately, no one told us that October 12th was the bottom of the market. There were no announcements that were made on that date.
Interesting. Historically, S&P 500 bull markets have lasted about 3.5 times as long as bear markets. Since 1928, the S&P's 27 bear markets have lasted an average of 286 days, while the average bull market has lasted 1,011 days.
Now, 1,011 days, most people would say, is over 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. Is that still there,
yes.
Approximately? Yeah.
Right.
Interesting, that bear market lasted 282 days, and the average is 286. So I would say we're right on
close.
The averages.
Yeah.
So the bear market is 20% down? Or what do you roughly define?
Standard definition of a 20% rally that was preceded by a decline of 20% on a closing basis, a new bull market. So the new bull market, not necessarily the definition of a bear, the definition of a new bull market.
What's a bear market?
Having been preceded, a bull market is a positive market up.
So bear would be a
negative. Right.
Yeah. Yep. For like sustained time, like steadily down?
Yes, steadily down 20%.
20, yeah.
With so it's 20 by 20 in essence, 20% down, 20% up.
If the new bull market were to last as long as the average bull, it would extend out to July 19th, 2025, and that source is Bespoke.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Good indicator.
It is.
It's positive. If it happens, it's positive.
Mm-hmm. Positive, yes. Generally positive.
Last year at this time, as of June 13, 2022, there were 410 stocks in the S&P 500 down year to date. 258 were down more than 20%, and 14 were down more than 50%. Fast forward to June 13, 2023, 283 stocks in the S&P 500 are up year to date. 91 are up more than 20%, and 15 are up more than 50%, and that source is Bespoke.
So looking in the rearview mirror doesn't work so well when you're trying to guess which way the stock market. They had gotten so negatively priced, and we talked about this at the beginning of the year. Microsoft, Google, some of these other companies, we said, you know, those are incredibly cheap right now, given the reality of how negative the market was on AI or significantly interested companies, if you will, in the technology sector. They'd just gotten taken out and clobbered. Well, they've responded really quite well since the beginning of the year, and they are included in those percentages, obviously.
So a year ago was the time to buy.
In October. Yeah, given their low. Yes.
Can I just interject? Because I remember I was sitting here or in your office one time, and you were saying something like Microsoft at 149, 140 something, you were saying was a really good deal. Does that sound possible? Because I just looked it up. It's at 336 now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that would have been some time ago. I would guess 150 is closer to, can you hit the 5-year? You can't go back that far.
I can't
far.
Go back now. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
But just a 1 year.
Yeah, that would have been some time ago to hit it at 150 there, Ron.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was 250 around there.
That's probably the price.
So still up considerably.
Still a good deal.
Right. Yeah. It was on sale, and we missed it. I hope you didn't miss it.
If they only had made that announcement and
exactly.
said, hey, this is the bottom, you guys, then we would have like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't make those announcements. That's why you want to dollar cost average in. You know, the typical, you know, teaching, if you will, related to that. Sometimes we can learn from history.
Mm-hmm. Here,
so to the extent that we can buy when prices are depressed, it's not easy to do. Totally understand that. Yes, Ron.
The 52-week range of Microsoft, it was down as low as 213 a year ago, mm-hmm. and as high as 351.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
stuff.
You,
consumer prices in the U.S. rose 4% on a year-over-year basis in May, which represented the 11th straight month of decelerating consumer price index. In the history of the series dating back to the early 1900s, the only streak that lasted longer than was the 12-month streak ending in June 1921, just after World War I and the Spanish flu pandemic. And that source is Bespoke.
Now, that's interesting, is it not? I mean, we have to go all the way back to the flu pandemic to find a period that was longer in terms of the consumer price index decelerating. Wow. So, my gosh, we did just come out of COVID, and that's interesting to see the similarity there.
It's kind of eerie to me.
It is
eerie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you said prices were up from this May to last May up 4%.
Consumer price in the U.S. rose 4% on a year-over-year basis,
which represented the 11th straight month of decelerating mm-hmm. consumer price index. Even though it's still at 4, mm-hmm. it's come down a lot from that point
mm-hmm.
from the previous point it was at.
With the average retirement account balance down 8.4% at the end of quarter one, 2023, compared to quarter one, 2022, workers are saving more for retirement. In quarter one, 14.5% of retirement plan participants increased their contribution rate, while just 3.2% lowered it. The increase in savings was led by Gen Z workers, where a net of 20.6% increased their contribution rates, and that source is Bank of America.
That's encouraging. Mm-hmm. It really is. So, you know, in spite of the negativity, they're probably getting salary raises,
mm-hmm.
Many of those workers, so they're choosing to put a portion of that into their 401k.
That is
very smart.
Very smart. Good job, Gen Z. Initial jobless claims in the week ending June 10th rose to 262,000, capping off the first back-to-back readings of 260,000-plus since October 2021. The four-week moving average of initial claims was now moved up to 249,000, which is the highest level since November 2021. Compared to the low of 182,000 in September 2022, initial claims have now risen by 44%, and that source is Department of Labor.
Believe it or not, the market is relatively positive about that reading because they see that as one of many indicators, that the economy is slowing down or in the process of slowing down, which is what obviously we've been talking about this morning in terms of the Fed. So it's interesting for sure. You can't control the weather. The only thing that we can do, obviously, is control our reaction and or response to it. How are we going to respond? And how do we stick to our guns when we know that we've made a good purchase and or that we're on a quality bandwagon, if you will? Sticking with a program at the end of the day, I hate that saying, sorry, but at the end of any reflection, if you will, can often be the best thing is to just stay where you're at, you know, instead of moving. And or if you are going to make changes, make them judiciously, carefully, in terms of, okay, so I do have some changes I do need to make because I see some things changing. We're going to buy something. We're going to buy a house or a car, whatever it might be. We do have to make some decisions now that may be a bit difficult. But moving slowly, because the news is always, and we know this, is always more negative than it needs to be. That's what they feed on. They feed on negativity because that's what gets the clicks. Unfortunately, that's what feeds the frenzy. That's what feeds the interest, is negativity. So realizing that it doesn't look nearly as bad as perhaps what the news is saying, it's starting to come around. We'll see what that means in our next election. Could be wild. And we have a question.
Yeah, we have about 2 minutes left. Somebody said, would you explain how the inflation rate can exclude food and energy? There's two CPIs, right?
It was excluded some time ago to moderate that rate. It doesn't include, it includes rents now, which is, talk about a lagging indicator. Instead, I don't think it includes housing, which is really frustrating from an immediate standpoint. It should include those things, but of course they tend to be more volatile and they don't fit the word of the day. Look at Deanne has this. You're so good. Consumer price index components, food and beverages, 14%. Housing, 44%. Apparel, 2.5%. Transportation, 16%, almost 17%. Medical care, 8%. Recreation, 5%. By the way, medical care costs are really coming down significantly. Mm-hmm. That's a huge surprise. So, yeah, don't always look at yesterday's news to make tomorrow's decisions. How are we going to make the best decision where we are right now? Do I need counsel to help me do that? Sometimes being able to bounce these things off of someone and actually have a conversation face-to-face, maybe the very best decision you make because of the increasing responsibility that you and I have for our own financial well-being now and in the future. All right.
We will wrap up this episode of Prout Financial Design with Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings. Remember, questions at proutfinancialdesign.com. Everything you need is there. Thank you all.